Not far away, inside Saunière's office, Lieutenant Collet had returned to the Louvre and was huddled over an audio console set up on the curator's enormous desk. With the exception of the eerie robot-like doll of a medieval knight that seemed to be staring at him from the corner of Saunière's desk, Collet was comfortable. He adjusted his AKG headphones and checked the input levels on the hard disk recording system. All systems were go. The microphone parabolique were functioning flawlessly, and the audio feed was crystal clear. Le moment de vérité, he mused. Smiling, he closed his eyes and settled in to enjoy the rest of the conversation now being taped inside the Grand Gallery. The modest dwelling within the Church of Saint-Sulpice was located on the second floor of the church itself, to the left of the choir balcony. A two-room suite with a stone floor and minimal furnishings, it had been home to Sister Sandrine Billet for over a decade. As the church's conservatrice d'affaires, Sister Billet was responsible for overseeing all non-religious aspects of church operations, general maintenance, gift shop operations, securing the building after hours, and ordering supplies. Tonight, asleep in her small bed, she awoke to the shrill of her telephone.
Sœur Billet, Église Saint-Sulpice.
Hello, sister, the man said in French.
Billet sat up. Although she recognized her boss's voice, in 15 years she had never been awoken by him.
I apologize if I have awoken you, sister, the abbé said. I have a favor to ask of you. I just received a call from an influential American bishop. Perhaps you know him. Manuel Aringarosa?
The head of Opus Dei?
Of course I know him, she thought to herself.
Bishop Aringarosa called to ask me a favor, the abbé told her, his voice nervous. One of his numeraries is in Paris tonight.
As Sister Billet listened to the odd request, she felt a deepening confusion.
I'm sorry, you say this visiting Opus Dei numerary cannot wait until morning?
I'm afraid not. His plane leaves very early. He has always dreamed of seeing Saint-Sulpice.
But the church is far more interesting by day. The sun's rays through the oculus, the graduated shadows on the gnomon.
Sister, I agree. And yet I would consider it a personal favor to me if you could let him in tonight. He can be there at, say, 1 o'clock. That's in 20 minutes.
Sister Billet frowned.
Of course, it would be my pleasure.
The abbé thanked her and hung up. Langdon couldn't tear his eyes from the glowing purple text scrawled across the parquet floor. Jacques Saunière's final communication seemed as unlikely a departing message as any Langdon could imagine. The message read, 13, 3, 2, 21, 1, 1, 8, 5. O draconian devil, O lame saint. Although Langdon had not the slightest idea what it meant, he did now understand Fash's instinct that the pentacle had something to do with devil worship. Part of it looks like a numeric cipher, Langdon offered.
Yes, Fash said. Our cryptographers are already working on it. But this text appears to be an accusation of some sort, wouldn't you agree?
Langdon tried to imagine the curator's final minutes, knowing he was about to die. It seemed logical. An accusation against his murderer makes sense, I suppose.
My job, of course, is to put a name to that person. Let me ask you this, Mr. Langdon. To your eye, beyond the numbers, what about this message is most strange?
Most strange? A dying man had barricaded himself in the gallery, drawn a pentacle on himself, and scrawled a mysterious accusation on the floor. What about the scenario wasn't strange? Langdon hesitated.
Saunière was a Frenchman, Fash said impatiently. He lived in Paris. And yet he chose to write this message
in English, Langdon said, now realizing the captain's meaning. Fash nodded.
Précisément. Any idea why?
Langdon knew Saunière spoke impeccable English, and yet the reason he had chosen English as the language in which to write his final words escaped Langdon. He shrugged.
Perhaps this will clarify.
Fash backed away from the body and raised the black light again, letting the beam spread out in a wider angle.
And now?
To Langdon's amazement, a rudimentary circle glowed around the curator's body. Saunier had apparently laid down and swung the pen around himself in several long arcs, essentially inscribing himself inside a circle. In a flash, the meaning became clear.
The Vitruvian Man, Langdon gasped.
Saunier had created a life-size replica of Leonardo da Vinci's most famous sketch. Considered the most anatomically correct drawing of its day, da Vinci's The Vitruvian Man had become a modern-day icon of culture, appearing on posters, mouse pads, and t-shirts around the world. The celebrated sketch consisted of a perfect circle in which was inscribed a nude male, his arms and legs outstretched in a naked spread eagle. The circle had been missing the critical element, a feminine symbol of protection. The circle around the naked man's body completed da Vinci's intended message, male and female harmony. The question now, though, was why Saunier would imitate a famous drawing. An odd thought popped into Langdon's mind. He glanced down at the message on the floor again. O draconian devil. O lame saint.
Yes, Fash said.
Langdon weighed his words carefully.